We are exactly halfway through the 8 o'clock hour on an absolutely gorgeous Monday morning. Welcome to the Mornings with Ed show. Delighted to have you on the program. And all morning long, I have just been so excited. It is, of course, Women's History Month, and we are celebrating powerful, strong women who've made a positive impact and kicked life in the ass. And in each of their respective fields this morning, we are fortunate to have two of these women with us today. You know her. She's been on the program before. Julie Lawton from Julie Lawton Design Build, who my neighbor has told me that she turned his life, his dream, into a reality. So we'll talk to her how she draws up the plans. She's the general contractor, the designer. She leads all the professionals that are on the site. An amazing story and an amazingly strong woman. We're glad to have her here. And if that's not enough, what we've got is, together with her bandmates, last month the She-Rock Awards gave out the Icon Award. Gina Shock is the Go-Go's drummer, legendary. You may have just seen the Go-Go's documentary on Showtime. It received the Critics' Choice Award for the most compelling documentary. An absolutely compelling career and a compelling life, and just an awesome drummer that we are delighted to have with us. We welcome Julie Lawton and Gina Shock with us this morning. Welcome, ladies.
Hey, guys. Hey, Julie. Hi, babe.
So you can hear each other well. We've got that technology working okay?
I think so. Okay. I am good, and I'm going to let Gina answer first because I'm hyper on coffee. So, Gina, you answer first, and I'll follow.
I'll do the best I can, Julie.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is, you know what? Let's just do this. Let's just have the conversation among friends. This is exactly what I wanted this morning. And I chose not to Zoom. I chose not to Zoom it because if you saw the Golden Globe Awards last night, Zoom didn't work out so well. So I'm preferring a telephone conversation. First thing I want to ask, though, this past year, having elderly parents and keeping them safe from COVID, this COVID monster has just been a nightmare of unexpected responsibility. Gina, how is your father, John Shock, doing?
Well, you know, I didn't see the Golden Globe Awards last night because I was taking care of my father, actually.
Okay.
We had a specialist come in here and sort of help figure out how to better take care of my father. Because you don't get all the help you need from people at the various companies that are brought in to do these sort of things.
Right.
It's very interesting. I'm learning a heck of a lot right now, and it's not the best news. So, you know, I'm just fortunate that I have the means to take care of my dad, and I brought him and my mom out here to live with me 5 years ago, and my mom passed, but my dad is here. He's 97, and I'm with him every day. You know, it's I'm just very grateful for the time I have with him.
Okay.
You know,
and we're grateful that you're able to spend this time with us this morning. What kind of extra precautions have you had to take, and certainly more recently?
Well, it's just myself, and I have two caregivers, and I have 24-hour care for Dad, and I have a fantastic old Victorian, and I live upstairs, and Dad, I had that all fixed up for Mom and Dad to move down there. And so that I could be around all the time. And, you know, I just don't go out that much. Gotta say, I'm like ready to explode for a vacation sometime this year. I hope. I think my hand's going to blow up. But,
yeah.
But this is time that is very special to me. And, I'm just happy that I'm here and able to do this. I've had this sort of work in my life, which has been the love of my life, my career in the music business, that I'm able to do this right now. Because, you know, this has brought to mind that a lot of other people cannot do what I do for my family. And that was a disturbing thing, a thing that came to mind last night, you know. How grateful and lucky I am that I can be here in the way that I am, physically, financially, every way that is possible, I am here.
And
it makes me, you know, it makes me grateful and also think, like I said, of other folks that can't do that. And, you know, we need to change some, a lot needs changing, but this is another area that perhaps I'm going to get more involved in, I think.
Right. And I'm glad you're going to get more involved. And we'll talk more about your involvement here in a couple of seconds. As we celebrate Women's History Month and strong women, and both of you are strong women who have done very well. First, I'll ask you, Gina, what traits of your dad, because there has to have been a strong father influence, of course. What traits of your dad do you recognize most in yourself?
I am very much like my father because I am like a workaholic. I love to be busy. I don't like sitting around. My father also, worked on the waterfront his whole life, but he's a builder. He built our shore home. He built all the furniture in it. This is when Julie and I started connecting. I was, I'm so interested in that part of my life that I haven't been talked much about. But, I would watch my father build everything, and I just have such a great admiration and love for that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I didn't know he did that because my grandpa was a carpenter. I didn't know that.
My dad could build a house from top to bottom and do everything, the plumbing, the brickwork. I mean, the guy is an amazing man, watching him and my mother, I couldn't have, I had an idyllic childhood. I just had the best and, they were the greatest teachers around. And my dad is he's kind of funny and goofy, and so am I. And, we do have a lot in common. Yeah.
And
Julie,
I love it.
Julie, do you take after either your grandfather or your dad? You said your grandfather was a builder?
Well, my grandfather, his name is Richard, and my husband's name is Richard. It's too weird. Anyway, he was a, furniture restorer, carpenter type of thing. And then my dad did the plumbing and the electrical. So they're both hands-on, never sit down. I mean, I joke about the OCD. But I never stop, the workaholic. My day is not done until everything's just right. And then if it's not done, I make a note so I can go to sleep. So it's constant, it's a constant movement. I remember one time the manager of Pink Floyd asked me to marry him, and he just looks at me and says, Julie, you won't be happy going to lunch in the spa with the girls every day, right? I said, no, dude, I am going to keep working. See you later. And he married someone else. Okay, so I love my job. And we were still friends after that, but he married someone else. So there you go. No, I have to work. I love my job. I'm passionate.
No. You do it well. I introduced the segment by telling you that one of my neighbors said that you turned his dream into a reality. And that that is what we hear. That is what we hear from everybody. You're able to see it before it's done. The project. Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah. You have vision.
I pull it out of their head and then get it off the paper in reality because I see it, but I can't do it without the client. And it's really their dreams and wishes that make it happen. Cause just like, the having a baby,
yeah, well,
the house
takes
is
the talent,
born again.
That is quite a talent, man. That is a talent.
It is. I was born with that gift. I was literally born with the gift to see and draw, and then the musician thing where I can actually drum and draw. It just comes out of my fingers. I didn't pursue that career. I pursued the drawing career. But it's natural and it's a passion. That's the secret, actually.
Right.
So, Gina's a natural. I mean, it just comes out of you. Like, it flows in your blood.
We're lucky.
Yeah.
We're lucky that way.
Yeah.
A lot of people go through their whole life and they don't know what the hell they're doing or what they're searching for something. And I knew at a very young age what I wanted to do.
So, let me ask you about that. So, Gina, tomorrow is the announcement from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame about whether if the Go-Go's will get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Either way, first of all, being the all first female group to write, record, play your own instruments, that should have been enough to get the band in there years ago. So, we'll get past that right now. But at this moment, getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, when you started with Edie and the Eggs, for instance, could you have imagined this moment?
You want to hear something crazy, and it's sort of 50-50, like half of me was like, of course, anything that can, a rock and roll star, is part of their, what they do, I will be a part of that because I am going to be a rock star. I mean, I always thought that, but that's, when you're, a teenager or you're early in your early 20s, whatever, I firmly believe that anything was possible. I mean, and I was brought up that way. See, my parents brought me up that way. Anything you want to do, you can do. And we didn't come for money. We just were hardworking, blue collar, working class people. But I that was instilled in me all, at a young age, and I really believe that. I mean, when I left for California, I was 21, and I hopped in my dad's pickup truck with my friend of mine from high school, and we drove cross country. And I told everybody the day I left, the next time you see me, I'm going to be a rock star. And I really did.
Well, there you
that.
Go. you projected it. That was your goal and your projection in your mind. Because my grandma used to tell me, and my mother, of course. Very independent. You can do anything you want. There was no restriction between boys and girls, sports or anything. Never, never, never. But my grandma kept telling me, make your goals, write it down for every day, every week, every year. Don't forget your goals. So it's always a projection, which turns into thoughts become things. If people, you know, I meditate and I get the thought, I listen to my inner voice, but there's a path, there's a road. You know, you create your road. You know, you don't just let someone else create it.
That's 100% right, Julie. You are absolutely. You hit the nail on the head.
There you go. There you go.
Yep, there's no lost unless you're numb. If you create your path, you know?
Right. Now, you each created your path as minorities in your field. You're definitely, there's definitely female drummers are a minority, and the greatest female builders in the world are a minority.
Yes.
How much sexism and unfairness is there on the way up?
I mean, I can only imagine for you, Julie. For us nobody would give us a record deal because it was all girls, and it was like there had never been an all girl band that had been hugely successful.
Right.
So no one was really interested in us. It was really a rough road. They like to come look at us like, oh, aren't they cute? Aren't they funny? Their songs are okay. They're just girls, kind of a, I think that's what people were, obviously we're thinking. And
that's what
us,
they, yeah.
I bet you're the same way, Julie, because I feel like gender never came into the picture. Like I just did, like for you and I, our statements about, you know, being women is just doing what we do and doing it well. And that serves as the best.
I'll tell you what my little cousin Haley Deegan, who's racing NASCAR now at 18 years old, she says, I'm not good at this because I'm a girl. I'm good at this because I know what I'm doing and I was trained. So it's not about that for you and me or any girl that succeeds in a man's world. It's because you're good at what you're doing. Just like I'm good at skeet shooting or whatever. Anything you're good at is because you have the talent. But when it comes back into being accepted, that's a different story and viewed. Because when I lived in New York City, it was the 80s. I wore a skirt and heels. I got whistled at every day. It was constant. She's the chick.
Right.
She's the girl. But then when they threw me in the boardroom at 6 o'clock at night at 24 years old, and I was telling these 50-year-old men how stupid these plans are. Wait, you have to move this. Then I got attention. And,
there you
know, I was designing it and I said, this isn't going to work. And they looked at me funny and I got all nervous, but you know, that's how, and my boss is like, get in there, sink or swim. And I just, you know, I just knew what I was talking about. Thank God. So, that was the good news.
So let me ask you each this, that we talked about your fathers and the male influences, and moms are exclusively a girl's best first example of strength, obviously, but outside of mom, outside of each of your mothers, who inspired you? What women did you admire growing up?
This is embarrassing to say, but with music, I was inspired by all men. But once again, I didn't think about it. Gender didn't enter into the picture. It was like, I saw a band and it's like, I want to be in that band. I want to be on that stage. I never thought about being if a guy or a girl. It was just like I was so drawn and passionate about it. So
that leads me here.
Besides my mother, okay?
So in 81, you guys got signed to IRS Records, and then shortly after that, you toured with the Police. That leads right into this question here. Stuart Copeland, one of my favorite drummers of all time. So let me ask you just a fan question. This is a fan question to Gina here. I love Stuart because his drumming is almost like he's drumming inside out. There's no other way for me to describe it. It sounds like it's inside out. When you're on tour with other musicians, do you experiment maybe just for an instance during your set with each other's styles? Like maybe in the middle of a song, you go, well, I'm going to try this Copeland role, figuring what the hell we're in Las Cruces.
I know that we watched each other when we were on tour, and Stuart grew up in the Copelands. They grew up in Lebanon. So his influences were way different than mine. That's for sure. I'm a 2-4. I'm a 2-4 girl. He's a 1-3 guy. You know.
Right.
So that's what you mean, like turning inside out. Okay. He plays on the 1 and 3. I play on the 2 and the 4.
Okay.
My accents and yeah. But you know what? I want. Oh, Julie. But who did any? Yes. Excuse me, Ed. But did Julie? Did you have any female role models? I'm curious about.
Well,
that because,
you know, I idolized Julia Morgan, who designed Hearst Castle, because okay. she did what I
oh,
did
wow.
way back then.
Yeah.
She was in the dirt.
Wow.
She was the architect who oversaw the construction with the client. So, and then she had workers, so they kind of worked it. I'm sure there was maybe a boss among the men, but she was in the field in hands. But that's the only female that I looked up to other than, you know, the Go-Go's girl band and Tina Turner.
So it kind of comes from your family. Comes a lot.
Yeah.
My
mother never stopped working, and we were born, and she was back at work a week later. But she also flew her own airplane. She beat my father at drag
Whoa.
Racing, and I was conceived in the back seat. This is how they met, their first date. So, you know, their first dating experience. So. I have to say that my mother's drive is parallel to my father's. They're both Virgos. I don't know, but that I didn't have the stay-at-home mom or the you know, you fall down, get up.
Neither did my mom wanted to be out there. Go ahead. My mom wanted to be out there working and doing stuff too. So, you know what, Julie? If we'd have grown up together, we'd be ruling the world, man.
Well, that's just it, because I had constant support and constant, let's just say, guidance, because there was goal
yeah.
setting and constant direction. I never sat down in my childhood. There was no downtime. And we always, I mean, to this day, I feel guilty if my house isn't perfectly clean. There's just little things. But, you know, it's an organized world. I grew up in an organized world, and my grandmother, remember, she raised 12 children without a husband. So that was also the influence of watching her, because her husband dropped dead of one of those heart attacks when the 12th child was born. So we watched her raise us and the rest of her children. So it was nothing but discipline. So I don't know if it's East Coast, it's mid, you know, blue collar, it's Midwest, it's everybody that grew up surviving, you know,
right.
too. So
I got to say, Catholics, 12 years of Catholic school. Well,
wow, you'll, 12
you'll
years?
You'll get disciplined, let me tell you.
Yeah. So,
oh my God.
So you went to Catholic school for 12 years?
Yeah, my brother, too. We were, you know, I'm from a Catholic family.
Right.
That's scary and fun, because I went to the public school because my mother refused to send me to the school she went to because she wanted us to have more experience and exposure with sports, because the Catholic school is a little strict and it kind of puts you in the you know how it was. But I went to the public school.
Yeah,
my mother said, thank God, because, you know, girls are girls, boys are boys, and she didn't want that. My mother was very liberal on that, so I remember that. And but yeah, growing up Catholic is another thing.
That's very true. That's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Gina, about your open heart surgery in 1984, and recovering from that. Was there a moment or any time where you thought, well, I'm not going to get back into it. I'm going to do something else. I'm looking elsewhere. Or no, were just, let me get past this and I'm going.
No, not being able to play and do what I love never entered my mind. The minute after the surgery, I got out a week after I had my heart surgery. I was home. My parents and my brother came out to LA to take care of me. And, you know, all I was focusing on is because, you know, we had to postpone our tour.
Right.
And so, you know, they were setting up the tour for, you know, several months later. And I like, that was my focus. And it's good because I had something really to focus on to get better. Like I had a date. I had to get my shit together. I couldn't just lay around and I had to really pay attention and do what I needed to do to get better as quickly as possible, which is always the best way to do it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You can get lazy about laying around and, you know, it's
right.
but I had a
yeah.
focus, you know?
Right.
And that, you know, so it was a major, you know, and also I used to think to myself, well, If I go out too early before I'm ready and I have a heart attack in front of 20,000 people, that's a pretty good way to go, I guess. I don't know. Sit behind my drum kit with the band
She's just leaning forward on the drum kit. Oh, what happened?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she's done. Yeah.
Jump over. Well, it'd be a good story, you know.
Yeah, and you're right. Laziness is like junk food. It's bad for you, and you can get addicted to it. So yeah, you're absolutely right there.
Yes, you can.
Let me ask you this, each of you socially here. Today we see Lady Gaga, Beyonce, Miley Cyrus, Taylor Swift, all established artists, Bruce Springsteen, all established artists, yourself, advocating for social justice with a much larger platform than artists had 20 years ago to do this, obviously with social media.
Yeah.
With the platform that social media provides, are you disappointed that there aren't a lot more younger artists doing that? Or does getting the next record deal as a less established artist make them more cautious? What?
You know, I don't know. You know, I can only speak for myself about this. And I mean, thank God that there are new platforms to get the word out about how people like myself feel. And every generation will do the same. I think it's when people are ready to start talking about stuff, you know. You know, some people are you know, some bands are, their lyrics are very political, you know, and other bands like the Go-Go's, we were just about making, you know, songs that were fun and party songs and just about having a good time. There were some lessons in some of the songs too, but, you know, we never thought we wanted to talk about politics. We all, believe me, we all have our opinions, but don't get me wrong, but we didn't feel like we wanted to put that into our music. But certainly a lot of other bands do. And there's plenty of room for everybody. And I encourage any young artist, any whatever your age be, if you feel compelled to talk about it, do it.
Right.
Don't be afraid.
And if you're passionate about something, or you're, you know, just a rule in general, if you're thinking about something, somebody else is thinking about it. So why not talk about it so everybody can come together, get it out? Because if you are worried about something or concerned about something, the thought is universal, usually, or for us, at least in the United States, but it's there. So why not talk about it? Because it helps other people talk about it.
Right.
So we know
there's a disconnect, and there's been a disconnect between Republican lawmakers and the American women. That's evident by the way that they govern, and it's evident in their willingness to toss aside women's rights and wage disparity and everything else. But is there also a disconnect between successful women like yourself in business and women with fewer opportunities? Is there that disconnect as well?
Joel, do you think so, Gina? I think that all women support women. So you get back to the point of how did I get successful? What did I do? Because we all started from nothing. And there was a path we chose, and maybe someone helped us on the path, like our parents is what I'm talking about. For me, it's in my DNA. And then my exposure to other professionals and help so I can groom myself and, you know, but I think all women naturally include women and give back, you know, that's part of our, if you will, DNA. So I think the only disconnect would be individual possibly, but that, I don't know. I think women are always empowering women. I just assume that because I always work on that.
Okay.
You know, I
100% agree with you, Julie. I couldn't have said that better. You definitely hit.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's right just part of our DNA. I think it's part of our DNA because, you know, the society having all men in business. I mean, women voted last. Men ran businesses. Women were at home. There's a whole protocol typed out by everything from the religion and the church and society.
Yep.
And you know, when I was born and Gene and I were born, it was the first time that was broken that it's okay for a woman to, because before that you were, even my mom, it was, you be the wife, you know, so it took a minute to break out of that.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
And in business, it just because they were in power first, it's taking longer, whatever.
Right. Now, I talked about each of you being minorities in your field. And this question is specific to Julie. Why do you think so few women have taken your path? Why you're really unique in your field? Why do you think so few women have taken your path?
You mean myself?
No, well, yeah. In the field you're in as a builder, as a designer,
I can tell you exactly because just like why do women not play professional football? You know, they have their own teams now, but you know, you don't see women on men's sports teams, and that does boil down to real DNA, so it should be separate because men naturally are, you know, stronger. But they just had a discussion about that in the Army in training. So women are to be treated equal. But the point is, with construction, I can tell you exactly why women aren't in here, because they are afraid and because they were shunned and weren't accepted. And women don't grow up in the dirt. There's very few women grow up with fathers like me and Gina had, or the exposure or the acceptance. Hey, go try framing or go try drywall. No, they put them in a restaurant or whatever, some other job, you know, where it's safe or, you know. But the point is, it just isn't thought of, because even when I got my contractor's license, I was a bit nervous, even though I had 5 years of college and 25 years, you know, 15 years of experience. I was nervous to take a test, but I passed the test with 98% and took it faster than anybody that's taken the test in California. So I did quite well. But the point is, I had a fear because I thought maybe the guys know something I don't know. It was so dumb, but it's the fear that you won't be accepted or you won't know what they know. But it's silly, but it's just a kind of a fear.
It's conditioning. It's conditioning. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Conditioning. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah, conditioning. Okay. Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's conditioning because you just think, well, no one else has done it. And what if I can't? Because I didn't swing a hammer before this. I watched it all and designed it all. And so after I got my license, I actually tried some framing, and I'll never do that again. It's hard as heck.
Okay. So you both talked about the support that women offer each other, and it leads me to a question. I'm going to go back to the Ghost in the Machine tour, if I can, for just a second.
Sure.
You spent part of that tour sharing the bill with Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. And I'm guessing you knew them well from the L.A. club scene. Were the two bands competing for gigs and tour spots? Was it a competition, or was it one of those total support situations?
Wait a minute. I might be crazy, but I don't remember doing that. Jett and Blackheart. For real? I don't think
they were. Well, I don't know. That maybe you didn't play on the same evenings as them, because they opened for parts
yeah,
of the tour. For
because we were kind of buddies. We knew Joan from, like, you know, 1979 and 1980, hanging around in the club. Joan, you know, before she was even with Kenny Laguna, way before the Blackheart, and we knew her around the club scene. She'd come to see the Go-Go's play all the time. So when she got with Kenny and things started happening for her, we were just overjoyed, because we were like, hey, we made it out of that scene, and we're into something much bigger than, you know, and we're, thank God things happened for us. But she was a hard worker, man. She never gave up.
Right.
She's like us.
Right.
She's a survivor.
Right. And you guys did it. And again, I want to go back to saying how awesome the Go-Go's were, and the fact that the first female all group to write, record, play your own instruments. Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, you know, you just reminded me of something. And I have a book coming out in October. It's a Go-Go's, okay, like a photo book, a coffee table photo book, but it's a lot of text. It's like 30,000 words as well. And there's a really cool picture of Joan and I together from like 1980.
Awesome.
A really cool shot.
Awesome.
You just reminded me of that. But the book will, you know, there's a lot of photos. Some you've seen, some you haven't, over the 40 years you've been together.
You have,
I was taking a lot of photographs in the early days, and so you'll see that in this book.
Excellent.
It's like a photo diary
as well.
Have you included a picture of your 57 Ludwig snare?
I do have a picture of that in there. Me holding.
Tell us the story of that snare.
It's so crazy. We were on tour. Yeah, it was probably in 1980. And we were in Boston, and we'd always go into thrift stores, pawn shops, any place we could get deals. And I saw that snare in a pawn shop, and I bought it for $100. And
wow.
Little did I know, you know, I just snare would be on every single Go-Go's recording. That is the snare that you hear on every Go-Go song. You know, even to Club Zero, I used that 57 on Club Zero, the last thing we recorded.
Sweet.
That drum just sounds fantastic. And it's like, you know, I never changed anything about it. It's still painted this hideous blue color, you know, that somebody likes to paintbrush. Oh, it's bad.
You never changed it.
But I never touched anything about it. I just had the edges trued, you know, to make them really even and perfect. But I never touched the shell in any other way. And that drum, it just sounds great.
It always sounds great.
And you sound
amazing.
Let me tell you. I think it's more you than the drum, which leads me to my next subject here. Before we head out, we do something on the program called Intro Wars. The listeners and myself, we're looking for the greatest intro in music history. And we'll eventually crown a champion, but each day we pit two of them, one against the other. Would you mind helping me out with today's before we go?
Sure, let's hear it. All right. Okay, brother.
This is the first intro. Tell me if you prefer this intro this morning. All right, that's contestant number one. You digest that, you chew on that for a little bit. You think of how great those drums are. But is it better than this?
No.
Yeah, for me, it's a done...
That's number one.
It's a done deal this morning. That is just...
That was easy.
That is some hot drumming right there, and it's been hot drumming throughout your entire career.
It gets your attention, huh?
Yeah, it does.
It's solid.
It is...
It's a solid chick.
Exactly. It does exactly what an intro is supposed to do. It makes you turn it up and want to hear the rest of the song. That's exactly what it does.
Thanks, guys.
I cannot thank you both enough for being here, for being the initial kickoff to Women's History Month here. Gina Schock, Go-Go's drummer, Julie Lawton Design Build. Gina, all of our love and thanks, and take care of your dad. And we wish you all the best. We look forward to having you both back here when we can be face-to-face.
For sure.
I love it. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
And thanks, Ed. Jewel, I'll talk to you later, kiddo, okay?
Talk to you later, Gina. Yep, I'm here.
All right, we'll see you both soon. It's 9:02, the Mornings with Ed show, Personal Stash, coming up.